exactly who I am. Now, say my name.
We must pay homage to him.
All right, people, we're back with another special episode, not our normal podcast, but we have a special guest here. We have a conversation. We want to talk about the quarterbacks, right? It's the hottest topic of pretty much every NC State season, especially for the last few years. Who's going to play quarterback? Who should play quarterback? And we have James joining us from IPS and Will. One of them likes Bailey Hockman. One of them thinks Devin Leary is going to start. So let's get to it.
Everyone starts backing up. This is like this is like Rocky III at the end of it when what's his name, Apollo, is like, ding ding, let's go.
Right, it's like, wait a second, I'm all of a sudden the Bailey Hockman guy. That's amazing.
So I'll set up this conversation. I was coming back from seeing a friend this weekend, and Will texts me and is like, why does James love Bailey Hockman? And what the question I want to ask is, in all seriousness, right now, Bailey Hockman is the starting quarterback, right? And you think that doesn't change given all circumstances, all things remain equal, right? Practice and all this stuff, right? Is that the point of view that –
I think we both have that point right now.
Right. I mean, I'm saying that I don't think NC State's going to randomly show up on a Saturday and Devin Leary all of a sudden be starting because he had a good week of practice. So I think going forward, the starting quarterback is now dependent on how Bailey Hockman and the offense plays. That's my take on it. And that doesn't mean I'm a Bailey Hockman believer by any means. You know, I mean, like, look, but I will say, I mean, I think we do have to at times take into consideration changing offensive coordinators, changing systems, experience, fit, different things are factored into this. I give an example, you know, and we might have talked about this, Malik Cunningham at Louisville. NC State played him in 2018 in Louisville and won that game 59-10, I believe. And he didn't look good. I mean, he just wasn't good. And, you know, I don't think anybody in Louisville expected him to be their guy long term. And they go out and get Scott Satterfield. And, you know, I mean, I'm looking at his numbers now over the last two seasons. I guess that's full 2019. And then the first two games of this year, he's got 28 touchdowns and 7 interceptions, which is pretty good. And so I think players can improve in different situations under different coaches. And I'd imagine, it's my belief, that's what has happened with Bailey Hockman is over fall camp, maybe something kind of a flip switched to the point that the coaching staff, I think, has confidence in him.
So, Will, before you get in on this,
okay,
I guess the question is, mm-hmm. All right, Bailey Hockman improved. Now, in theory, Devin Leary probably improved as well, right? And then he missed some time, and Bailey Hockman maybe got a little ahead of him. But if all going into this all along, Devin Leary, you know, Dave Dorn saying, hey, Devin Leary's a starter. He's been saying that since the spring, I believe, mm-hmm. right? He said it straight away. At what point does that come back into play where, you know, they really believed in him? Was it they believed in him more there, or did they believe maybe he was, you know, maybe they didn't believe as much in Hockman? Like, what happened that would change that? And then is there no opportunity for Devin Leary, I think this is where Will wants to go. Like, yeah. If Devin Leary gets caught back up at practice, you know, why wouldn't he be back as the starter? Because that's where they kind of were, they circle back to, right?
Well, okay, full disclosure, I'm going to try and give you some, and I might have put this on our, I don't even know if I've put this on our board yet, but when you guys had me on last week, I kind of hinted a little bit about Bailey Hockman. Mm-hmm. You were
that. I mean, yes.
You know, I just, hey, you know, Bailey Hockman's looking good too. And to be honest, that wasn't, you know, I wasn't just saying that for no reason. I mean, starting, I think it was either Sunday night or Monday morning of the weight game week, I had two people reach out to me and tell me that Hockman was going to be the starter in that game. And I thought they were crazy, you know, because that was literally the first I'd heard of it. And you know, what I had heard was that he had taken all the reps that weekend with that. I think they had like a mock game or something like that. He had taken all the reps with the ones. Leary did not. And that NC State was going to go in that direction. And, you know, then you come Monday and it was either that morning I heard it or Sunday night. But then Monday afternoon, NC State releases their depth chart and Leary's the starter, which I wasn't surprised by that. Even if Hockman is the guy, Dave Dorn's not going to start a controversy on Monday and name him the starter on the depth chart, in my opinion.
Right.
That does no good. You know, you do not want to give Wake that information, much less have to answer those questions all week. You know, and especially when you're talking about left-handed quarterback versus a right-handed quarterback. I mean, just strategically, if you were going to go in that direction, it didn't make any sense to announce that. So I wasn't even surprised, and I continued to hear it during the week. And I just was like, okay, we'll see, we'll see, we'll see. And just the information I had gathered was that, you know, Leary was one of the ones that was dealing with the COVID situation and was away for 2 or 3 weeks. I don't know the exact time frame of that time. I know on the broadcast, I think they said 20 days, which is pretty much 3 full weeks that you are not around the team, around the program, et cetera. And so I'm wondering, maybe up to that point, he was the starter or he was the guy. I know, and you guys will know that during that stretch, we didn't have a lot of media availability. So we weren't asking Dave each day, how's Devin Leary doing? Is he still your guy, et cetera? And to be honest, I don't even know if down the stretch of fall camp, anyone asked Dave about it. You know, just because I think the assumption was Leary was the guy. I don't even think anyone asked him, how's Devin Leary doing? I hadn't went back and checked when the last time he was asked about it. So, you know, as a head coach, you're not going to offer up that information anyways if it's changed. So I think that during that 20-day period, Hockman started to build chemistry with the receivers. He started to show some things in practice. I think they love the fact that he's mobile. I think they love the fact that he's tough. I think they feel like he's a good leader. I mean, you know, you guys saw that game. I mean, there was a couple of times he got killed. You know, he got crushed. And he just gets right back up. You know, I mean, he threw an interception, bounced right back from it. I think there's certain elements there that maybe from an intangible standpoint, they just kind of felt like that he was more prepared to be the guy. And the other thing is, you could probably make a case, man, that 20-day stretch was probably the longest Tim Beck has spent with any of the quarterbacks, you know, because you didn't have – I mean, he comes in January, and I think they had 2 weeks of spring practice before that was halted. So it could be he has a really good feel for Bailey Hockman. So I just personally believe, based on hearing that and that Doran – that's the direction they went in then – you know, that they're going to stick with Hockman because, you know, you guys know, I mean, for me, if it's Doran, the easiest thing he could have done was start Devin Leary in that game.
Oh, I disagree with this take, but I'll let you okay. go.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, like, you had a built-in excuse for him not succeeding. You could have came out, and however he plays, win or lose, you come out. If he plays good, if he plays bad, he missed 3 weeks of fall camp. He's rusty. It's going to take him some time to get back. We went with him. You know, this is what we're dealing with in this COVID situation. But instead, I thought it was more risky to go with Hockman just because, you know, you've got your starting quarterback sitting over there with his helmet on, looking like he's ready to go in. I mean, very few teams, if they've truly got a quote-unquote starter, are going to let him sit there on the sidelines with his helmet on and be available to that degree and you not play him. And so that let me believe, I don't really think they consider Leary the quote-unquote starter anymore. And again, that's just me reading into it, and you know, we'll see what happens. But I personally believe that they've made a decision to roll with Hockman until, you know, unless he, you know, his play falls off. I don't think Leary is going to do anything in practice to really get that job back. And I could be wrong. That's just kind of my take on it.
Yeah, so my counterpoint to that theory is you would start – Leary in that situation if you didn't have a guy like Hockman available. So to me, like, Dave Hodoran has got to win games this year, right? He has got to get the fan base off his back in some capacity, and especially in the first game. I think Hockman is a good backup quarterback. And I guess what I saw was just like a slightly elevated version of who he was last year in this game. You know, he can throw the short and intermediate stuff in relatively accurately, but he also locks onto receivers. He doesn't seem to get to second read very often. He's prone to scramble, which I think is good if you are, you know, in that three or four vertical route running, right? It clears out a lot of room underneath for him to go scramble. Where I get scared is when he's running left to right and starts throwing off his back foot, which he did a couple times. So maybe that'll improve, you know, that might improve if he gets more reps. But I guess what I would be saying is, once it was revealed that Leary was out for 20 days, which probably equates to maybe like 8 to 10 practices, because they, I think everyone was off.
I think once they came back from what I had heard, they were on a rapid schedule to make them practice. I think they were practicing almost every day.
Yeah. So when I think about that, if he missed that period of time, and I think you're right, all that time gets soaked up by Hockman and he gets that time with Beck. You know, I thought everything was kind of tailored to what Hockman could do. I was nervous before the game. I was happy with what I saw, but I guess I also thought this version of Hockman is going to get destroyed in 2 to 3 weeks because.
My only argument against that is I don't think you saw a slightly elevated version of him. I mean, you know, if you look at his numbers last year, he had one touchdown, four interceptions, completed 55% of his passes, averaged 5.6 yards per attempt. I mean, in this game, I mean, it was an easy, you know, 70% completion rate, 8.3 yards per attempt.
Right.
You know, like, I think he was better than him or Leary were ever last year.
Well,
and again, maybe we're saying that's Wake Forest, right? I don't know. And as for like the situational stuff, does he lock on to receivers? Sure. Does he scramble sometimes? Yep. When he maybe shouldn't. But I think that's the case with the large percentage of quarterbacks in college football. Like, I think personally, and I think Sam Howell at North Carolina does that. I think Sam Howell locks on his number one progression. I think he scrambles if that first read is not there and he can't go vertical. He looks to take off and run. I think there's areas there, sure. I mean, but I don't necessarily think Bailey Hockman is a NFL level quarterback. I mean, I think one of the things I said last week when I was on was Tim Beck's never had a quarterback like Devin Leary. He, in my opinion, he's never had. If you look at Houston, at Nebraska, Ohio State, Texas, he's never had what you would call a pocket passing pro style quarterback. He's always had a dual threat guy that you had to scheme the offense around. And so I just wonder if at the end of the day, he's more comfortable with Hockman. And you're right. Maybe his upside is not what Leary's is. And we'll find out here in a few weeks that you know, they tend to go back to Leary. But I think what I believe is if they make that move, it's going to be because of what you say. It's going to be Hockman's, you know, his game falls off.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go to Leary, right?
Yeah. It's funny because you say that about the quarterbacks he's worked with in the past. I did say, I think, I don't know if we tweeted this after the game or it was in our chat room, but I was like, we've seen Beck work with like the trash throwing of mm-hmm. Martinez and others, right? He can make it work. And so I think he's got a better throwing skill set to work with here than he had at other stops. Maybe not Ohio State, right? But and he's had a history at Texas where he's had to navigate going back and forth between quarterbacks and making it work as best he could. So I'm not worried there. To your point about it, like, it looked easy for Hockman. I think two things. The first two quarters, you know, Wake was adjusting. I think they had no idea what we were doing. And you do see that 9 of his 16 completions were behind the line of scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they were smart. Make it easy on him, limit his mistakes. That's my concern, is if he can't expand and start attacking the middle of the field or getting those deeper shots, which we may not have revealed in this game. I'm just worried that defenses like Virginia Tech, UVA, Pitt are just going to go sink in and just say, all right, try to beat me going beyond 15 yards.
Let me ask you this. Do you think Wake Forest did not do that?
So
I think Wake did not gear up to try and stop the run game?
No, I think they did. And I think that's the best thing about this, is that the offense, from a run game perspective, took complete advantage of them and totally blew them off the line constantly. Like, that's the one thing that gives me hope, is right. If you can get that performance every game, then, you know, you can limit Bailey Hockman. We can probably talk about it later. The red zone still gives me a lot of concern as far as just what we're doing with the quarterbacks. But I think we made it easy on him. I just don't know if it's going to keep being easy as far as if you look at that chart here, I'll give a promotion to IPS, right? Philip did a great column with charting the passing game. And you can see, I mean, all of his stuff is either behind the line of scrimmage or right along the edges of the field. And I just think better defenses, better talented defenses are going to be trying to jump those routes. So maybe we get double moves and we take advantage of it. I just see that's what I see as his limitations. He is a better version of himself from last year, mm-hmm. but I still see, like, I didn't think he was a good deep ball thrower last year either.
And we haven't seen that in this year, if he can or not. Because, like, frankly, with Wake Forest, you never really had to.
Right.
I was not a Bailey Hockman fan. I thought State should have stayed with Matt McKay last year. And if they didn't go with McKay, they should have went straight to Devin Leary. All I'm saying is, like, I believe that they think something maybe has changed there. And it could be, to be honest, it could be that at the end of the day, in the spring and in fall camp, Leary didn't make the development or the strides that they expected him to make. And again, I think the 20-day period is unfortunate. But I don't know. I just feel like if this was your guy, because I think I asked you, Will, on, mm-hmm. on our forum, like if North Carolina's in this situation and you've got because what we remember from Bailey Hockman is one touchdown, four interceptions. I don't even know if, less than 55% completion rate. I don't even know if last year we would have considered him a good backup quarterback. So that's the last memory we have of him before this game. So if your guy is Devin Leary and you firmly believe in him, I don't believe you let him not start that game and work out the kinks in game. I think any other school that had a true starter, they're going to do that with him. And they're not just going to say, well, I think the backup gives me a better chance to win right now. I mean, nothing's changing in a week. You just went out and scored. I mean, like, look at how bad the offense was last year. You just scored 45 on an ACC team, and it was easy. Like, you're not going to just, in my opinion, try and mess that up by going to Leary.
You gave a really good example, which is basically if you were UNC and you had Sam Howell and Jace Reuter and you're in this situation, who do you start? Now, I think what I had asked on the board was, is it last year? So it's kind of year zero and you have no expectations, or is it a year after this guy's been in the system? I think in that scenario, you would let Howell start because you'd be like, okay, I've seen what this guy can do. He's got a good arm. He'll work it out. This, I think, is a different scenario because, like I said, I just feel like there's so much pressure on Dave to win, and he had the opportunity of basically being able to play 4D chess with Clausen and not talk about it all week, then surprise him with not just a different quarterback, but a left-handed quarterback, which flips his defense around as well. So, I think we made the right call, and I don't disagree that Hockman shouldn't be pulled because of what happened last game. My thing is just, I would think that after maybe 3 or 4 weeks, Leary running with the twos can probably catch up a lot in that time frame if nothing happens before, right? We're ignoring if Hockman gets caught up in contact tracing or something like that.
Yeah, right.
But part of me, I think one of the things that had me so agitated on the boards was Doran keeps, I don't know if he's just playing chess again, and he's like, well, he's basically implying that Hockman has the job because Leary isn't ready. And he basically says when Leary is ready, he will be in. And I don't know if that's just him being like, yeah, that's just how it works, right? If you're not ready, you're not going in the game. Or if he's saying, like, Leary's my starter, but there's no way he could be ready at this point. I don't know. What I'm hoping is Hockman looks good this weekend if we get to play. And we at least get two more wins, another win. That's all I care about.
Yeah, and I think Dave has a balance there he has to try and deal with right now, right? Maybe he doesn't. I think that's subjective as well. But, because I've read his comments, and I was on the Zoom call this week when he spoke about it, and because he also made a statement that he said this is his team now in mm-hmm. reference to Hockman. So, that statement there makes me think the other way. I think he's kind of going back and forth in what he's saying to the media. and publicly, because I think he wants to keep everybody as happy as possible. You need to be able to keep Devin Leary engaged, because like, and look, because think of the counterpoint. If you come out and say, Bailey Hockman beat out Devin Leary, Bailey's our guy going forward, we're not making a change until he struggles. What do you think? Like, I don't expect you to get the best out of Devin Leary in practice. I expect that to open up the door for him to be critiqued even more. I think that he's trying to balance it to where you're going to get Bailey Hockman as your starter unless he falls off. And then when he falls off, I wouldn't be surprised if we conveniently hear, well, Devin's been better in practice, we're going to go with him now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and that's what I mean, is I don't think it's going to be a deal where Hockman is playing well and just 3 or 4 weeks from now, you're just going to randomly start Leary going forward because he's quote unquote ready. You know, I thought the move was all like, ever since I started to hear about it, and just the more I gathered, I've thought the move has been more about what they've seen from Hockman and less about Devin Leary. And you're getting that from a guy who, like I said, I was not a big believer in Bailey Hockman. I'm still not completely sold on him as your long-term answer. I think the thing that's interesting is with the zero-year rule, you've basically got 3 or 4 years of both of these guys mm-hmm. anyway. So if you do believe that he's made strides, and I think the thing that we keep over, you know, missing here is, what does Tim Beck think? You know, who does he think should be the guy to run his offense? And that's kind of some of the rumors or murmurs I've heard, is that there could be a belief there that Beck is, you know, I think he feels comfortable with what he gets from Hockman from an intangible leadership standpoint. Mobility matters. You know, I don't know. I think it's something that's going to be interesting to track. I am concerned a little bit about the throws short of the line of scrimmage, but I mean, I think that's also could be relative to your personnel, you know, relative to what you're just going to need to, going to have to do. I mean, maybe, you know, like some of you guys watch the NFL, some of the best quarterbacks in the NFL or NFL history don't throw the ball vertically. You know, I mean, Tom Brady is not a vertical ball, deep ball thrower. Drew Brees is not. I mean, both of those guys are generally always around the line of scrimmage. And look, I'm not comparing NC State's quarterbacks to those guys. I'm just saying that, like, you can run successful offenses and not have to be an intermediate deep ball throwing offense. Now, I believe this offense should have those options available to them. And that might be what you're referring to, Will, because when you can run the ball, like we probably all three of us expect NC State to be able to run it, what should eventually open up is vertical mm-hmm. because teams are going to have to play downhill and get their safeties downhill and different things like that. But my hope is the difference in this year and last year is because you can create, you've got that running game going now more, maybe more consistently, those windows get wider. I mean, you look at Leary, at Hockman's two longest throws. I mean, I know I can make one of them throws. I mean, like, you know, you run play action to carry Angeline down the seam and there's nobody 15 yards around him. You know, I mean, I think he threw one to Dylan Parham. That might have been his longest completion, either that one or the Devin Carter one. And, I mean, there's literally nobody around him because you've got linebackers and safeties having to respect the run game. And I think that's where you hope going forward that those vertical shots open up, is because you can create, you know, large enough windows to where any quarterback can throw those. So I do think there's questions there still. But man, I mean, it had to feel good for NC State fans to watch you go out and just kind of really easily – I mean, you put 45 up on Wake Forest, and it was very, very easy.
I mean, we probably should have had at least, well, I don't know, maybe it doesn't matter work in the end, but I mean, you know, we lost momentum when that fumble wasn't called and they scored two plays later, right? We saw some questionable things that probably last year would have put us down, I guess I would say. So this team, just the chemistry and mental side of it is way better than I could have expected.
Well, I ask you guys a question because I don't know the answer to it. I haven't looked it up. Maybe you guys have. But when's the last time NC State came back from a fourth quarter deficit to win?
Did someone ask who is that obscure ACC facts guy? I thought someone asked.
It might have been Georgia State, I think, that one year, 2015 or something, where they had to fumble at the goal line and it was a – State probably should have lost that game. I think they were trailing. But – against ACC teams, I mean, NC State's not frequently fell behind. I know it was a problem with Ryan Finley because people often pointed to him not leading you to a victory. But, I mean, you know, NC State falls behind to Wake Forest with 8.5 minutes to go in that game. And, you know, I talked about it in one of my columns. I mean, they go on a drive where they attempt one pass and they don't even get to a third down and go 75 yards and score a touchdown. I mean, that's what I meant by it was easy. Like, yeah. You didn't really – I mean, it's 2nd and 8, and you're calling run, you know. And again, against most – all teams, you may not be able to do that. But I thought it was encouraging because, you know, I watched Clawson after the game, and he talked about how, you know, the front – their defensive front was supposed to be their strength coming into the season. And, you know, I know some of their writers were asking him, well, did you not really know what they were running, and are you not really here ready to be tackling because of COVID and all that? And he's like, no, they just moved us around. Yeah, I mean, you know, they were trying to throw him some softballs, and he kind of dismissed it and was just like, no, they reestablished the line of scrimmage. They've got really good running backs. We couldn't tackle them. And I just think for State, that's probably going to be a strength going forward if they can stay healthy on the O-line and running back, where it may not matter who's at quarterback, to be frankly honest with you. Because, like, I know I mentioned Malik Cunningham earlier. I don't think Malik Cunningham's a great quarterback. I mean, but, you know, I think Scott Satterfield runs a good offense, and they've got really good running backs to where he's getting a lot of easy – like we talked about, I mean, this guy's averaging – last year he averaged 11.5 yards per attempt. I mean, that's crazy.
I think we should be praising Beck and the staff. Just, I mean, all things considered, right, they got that offense installed. And you would – going into the game, I thought we were going to be like a procedural penalty mess. We were going to be missing assignments. So, like, the one thing that caught my eye was just how smooth and well executing we were, regardless of really who was in the game, at least on offense. You know, and I was thinking about all those passes behind the line of scrimmage. I'm hoping that improves, because maybe that's an element too of, okay, well, we've known for about a week or so that Bailey was going to have to be the guy. We're going to give him the 70% of the playbook that he's really ready to work off of. And the thing is, like, if it keeps working, it doesn't matter. Like, I could see that offense, if we had that kind of production, we're going to win 6 or 7 games based on what I've seen from the ACC so far. It can work. I'm right. Concerned about Bailey in the red zone more than anything else. I thought we really changed the playbook down there to kind of take him out of the equation. And he's great running the ball down there, and we're great running the wildcat and all that. But to me, I was just like, are we going to have to be this creative all year? Or is this just, again, we had a limited playbook and we thought the best way we could do this was to have these kind of 4 or 5 plays down here?
No, I think, honestly, you know, I think that's something that's been a deal with NC State since Doran has been at NC State. If you go and look at their numbers, they've been a heavy run team in the red zone. Mm-hmm. You know, even when they've had Ryan Finley, Jacoby Brissett, I mean, there's a reason why NC State's quarterbacks were generally between 15 to 20 touchdown passes in a season, even though they had one of the better offenses in the ACC. It's because when they got into the scoring zone, they would lean on their running backs. Reggie Gillespie, for as much as – like, look, I mean, Reggie Gillespie was not as talented as several of NC State's running backs they've had over recent years. And I don't mean that as a knock on Reggie, but he had 18 touchdowns in a season because they ran the ball in the red zone. I think you're going to see whoever the quarterback is de-emphasize. Now, again, that could be a problem. That could be lead to more Chris Dunn field goals and different things like that. I just think that's a general philosophy that may come down from your head coach, because we've seen it with 3 different coordinators now. When Matt Canada was here, you ran the ball in the red zone with Nyheim Hines and Jalen Samuels. With Drinkwitz, it was Gillespie and Hines. And now you're seeing it with Beck. I mean, I think it's a way that you're giving your ball to your best playmakers. You're trying to limit turnovers. You don't want to have any bad – I mean, I think there was a game with Finley maybe in 16. I think it might have been Boston College at home, where State had a couple of turnovers in the red zone and lost that game like 13-7 or something. It could have been
That was Jacoby, I think.
Yeah, it could have been Brissett. It was one of the games where they were in Raleigh, and, I mean, BC was not good that year, and State threw a couple – maybe threw an interception in their end zone. And I know I remember hearing the following week just in the background, well, that's one of the reasons why you run the ball more in the red zone, like that general philosophy. So I think State's going to – and I don't know what their red zone numbers were this week. I mean, what was their – you know what their conversions were like?
Pretty damn high, right?
Yeah, it had to be, right? 6 scores in the red zone, looking at now 5 touchdowns, 1 field goal. I mean, you'll take that. right?
I mean, my concern is
right. I get it.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is like I thought this game went as perfect as it could, all things considered. Especially, I mean, I can tell you the general NC State fandom was extremely pissed when they heard that Leary wasn't starting the game, right? Sure because we just said here comes next last year, but you know, like look. I think the thing is, I'll take Bailey Hockman going 16 of 23 for 200 yards and, you know, one touchdown in the air and two, you know, one on the ground. I just don't want to keep seeing these pick sixes or the interceptions. And that's always been the problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for a lot of us, probably it was when that pick six happened. And I think we all agree that's probably more on the wide receiver than anything else. It was just like, oh, my God, here we go again.
Right. Okay, I got to jump in on that one because there was a good discussion on your boards, James, about that. There was some good analysis from some people who know way more about football than I do. But one of the things you pointed out with during in your latest views article was the play to Lassane. That was the same exact route. It looked to be the same exact route, and Wake was playing the same exact defense. And my concern with Hockman. I don't care who starts. I just want the best player to start. My concern with Hockman is that he stares that down, right? They ran that route. Wake jumped. Wake had that one too. If you watch from the very jump, that linebacker is sliding over to slide jump in front of that route. And if, you know, Lassane was a shorter route maybe. I'm not sure.
And that was the difference. That one was like a 5-yard. I think it was 3rd and 4. He ran like a stick route right at the sticks He should have completed that pass. I didn't think that was a good pass by him.
Yeah, he if they run that himself. Yeah,
if they run that deeper like they did with Provolone's route, then that's another pick six because that was the same thing. Like I saw that coming the whole way. If you go back and watch that, he is just eyeing that down, and you know we saw that last year, and then he did it again in this Wake game, and I think that whether it was his fault. He has to make a better decision. If he sees Provolone turn around and out of his route already, or if he sees Lassane in the same way out of his route, I assume you don't want to make that throw because Wake sees that too. They're jumping on him. That's how they pick that six. So that is the concern I think some people have with Hockman is that he showed a little bit of last year in those couple plays there.
Yeah,
but I guess, you know, it's only like his fourth game starting, so right. I'm being a bit critical about it. But I understand, you know, that's people want to make sure that you know you put your best guy there so that you're not limited to only running the ball, right? Your top end is still being able to beat somebody when they load the box and all that thing.
Yeah, and we did a film room on that play, and I called a couple of the guys that I like, Phillip and James Johnson, who's another guy who helps me break down film, and I wanted to get their opinions on it before we did it. And one of the things that I think James told me that was interesting was he said that what you got to understand with a lot of NC State schemes now passing the ball is a lot of them are running deeper routes, right? Because we've talked about how. You guys have just talked about it. With the way you're running the football, you want to be able to stretch those corners out so that when you do run it, a lot of times you're just trying to run those corners out of the play. So you're getting to where you're running a lot of like 15-yard comebacks and different things like that. And the problem with moving off that progression so quick is because it's a deeper route. So you have to, as a quarterback, you have to give that a little more time to see if it's open or not. Like, and I'm talking about the Provolone one. I think the Pavilion. I think the
we're getting them.
Yeah, I'm all over the same deal with him. But the Lassane one was more of just a quick hitch where he just kind of threw it in the dirt. And it could have been, like you said, he could have maybe seen that linebacker and thought, "I'm gonna give it to him." You know, and that's the thing as a quarterback, man. It is a literal. That is such a tough position to play because in a split second, not only are you trying to decide who to throw the ball to, you're trying to decide what type of throw to make. You know, do I put air under it? Do I throw it at his feet so only he can get it because you've got somebody undercutting it? Do I throw it high because someone's going low on him? Like, you have to make – it's such a field position. And I think, though, with his progressions, the reason why it seems like at times he doesn't move off of guys quick enough is because they're asking him to, okay, you have to read this 15-yard comeback and see if you've got to move – if that's going to be there. And I think he's waiting on that. Now, I do think that's something he has to improve on. And your hope is with experience that'll improve. But You're probably right, man. I feel like we're nitpicking him because he's to me just going to be a very good college quarterback at his ceiling. And with those guys, there's going to be limitations because I can't stress it enough. I did not believe Bailey Hockman should be the starter going into this year. I was all in on NC State going with Devin Leary because I do think he has a lot of upside as a thrower, but there are various things that goes into play at quarterback. Accountability.
If you don't need to throw it, then that changes things a little bit differently.
And the other thing is like, NC State's second touchdown. They get to the red zone, they call QB lead, and Hockman walks up from the fifth from what was a 12-yard line, maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, like, so the question maybe my thought seeing that play was the counter to that is, do you call that with Devin Leary?
But isn't Devin Leary a dual threat? I mean, we were talking about that preseason, right?
I think he can be. But we don't know what they know, right? Like, so maybe, and I'm not saying that's definite. I'm just saying maybe they feel like, okay, if we're going to ask our quarterback to be mobile, that's another, like, if you've got a list of boxes you've got to check, right? Arm strength, you may check for Leary. Accuracy, you may check for Leary. Well, maybe for Hockman, you're checking mobility. You're checking toughness. You're checking leadership. You're checking intangibles. Maybe he knows the offense better. Like, I don't know what all they're looking at to make this decision. I think a lot of times, I know for me, I tend to look just strictly at arm talent and be like, oh, well, you've got to play this guy because he's clearly the better thrower. When that's not generally the case. I know one example was, and this guy by no means was successful, but you remember in Chuck Amato's final year or two, he played Daniel Evans. Mm-hmm. And that was ultimately probably one of Chuck's downfalls is not having a quarterback. But Daniel Evans should have never had to be your quarterback, right? But he was playing over guys more talented than him, Harrison Beck or Justin Burke, who on paper were more talented, more stars, better arm, all those things, because I think he probably brought as a whole more to the table. And so I just wonder if, maybe that's what you're seeing right now at Hockman. I mean, look, I could be completely wrong, man, and in a week or two, they do come out and just say, hey, Devin Leary was great on Wednesday, so he's starting against Pitt,
I mean, my theory
– doesn't sound right to me, but okay.
Yeah, so my theory is if Leary in practice plays up to what his potential is, then this is probably no contest. But clearly that's not happening yet. Mm-hmm. It still hasn't, and he got set back. So maybe that will happen. It's funny how you were saying it. I would think that Hockman is the more accurate passer actually between the two. And my issue with him has always been decision-making or like a gunslinger mentality, which it has its ups and its downs, right? And we caught the up, I think, on this one. And, I guess I just feel like we have to, caution NC State fans because now people are like, we're going to run 300 yards every game. Hockman is going to be the perfect game manager. Like, everyone's starting to see that pie in the sky. And I'm like, guys, like, in 2 or 3 weeks, we could have a completely different situation.
Let me give you guys an example. Last year, when NC State went to Bailey Hockman, what was the big reason people thought they made that move?
Oh, my God. Deep ball.
Okay. Deep ball, right? So what did he come out and try to do? He tried to throw the deep ball. Like, a lot of his stuff was intermediate and vertical. If you go back and look at some of Phillips' columns from when he was playing, he would first play against Syracuse at home. He throws a vertical shot to Devin Carter or Mecca Emezi. He threw one into Florida State against him. Some of his deeper throws that were intercepted were 15 yards in that intermediate route range. Was last year's play of him kind of in response to how McKay played? And what I'm saying is, like, are we holding how he looked last year? And again, this is just a theory. I'm not saying this is the case. But I'm wondering if last year NC State said, you know what? We need a guy who can throw the football deep. Matt McKay couldn't do it. Let's go with Bailey Hockman. So now you're trying in that stretch to really work in areas that maybe, you didn't need to have to try and stretch it out. Like I said, I didn't think Matt McKay was playing really, really terrible. Did he not hit some deep balls? Sure. But I said it at the time, and you guys remember, 27 on the road in his first start, yeah. I'll take it. I mean, that ended up being pretty damn good because I don't know if we scored 27 again.
If Matt McKay was here right now, he would have started this game. I'm going on the record.
Oh, all right. Let's get back to this.
I don't know why Matt McKay got railroaded. I have props for him because he is out in Bozeman or Big Sky or wherever right now and fly fishing and having a good time while waiting for college football to start again. But I never understood why people thought the other two guys were better solutions. And maybe that's my issues with the staff.
Let me reel this back in before James gets going on Matt McKay too.
The reason I brought that up was like I think our decision making, the thought on Hockman's decision making being poor, is based on the way he played trying to throw vertically, and it opened the door for him to make more mistakes. So I'm wondering if this year, if NC State reels him in and he's throwing more short passes when he has to, and then tries to hit a couple when they're just completely wide open because your run game so good, maybe he's not as bad of a decision maker. You know, mm-hmm. I just. If being in a different system will improve his decision making.
Yeah, so that leads me to my next question. It'd be the last one. I thought he made some really good run reads, right? Drop back wasn't there, and he knew when to run and where to go. Like when he saw the field, he made some really good decisions there. Like Will pointed out earlier, the running against the grain, throwing off his back foot, even though he completed a couple of them, then, you know, I thought those were – you know, questionable. My question is, this is going to be speculation on your part. I understand that. Does Bailey Hockman being in there limit what Tim Beck wants to do versus what, let's say, Devin Leary could do?
As a runner, you mean, or just overall?
Just in general, overall. Like, does it change the offense, right? Or is if that's the case, is that why maybe Will thinks, hey, the offense is going to expand a little bit more if Devin Leary's in there and, you know, throws a better deep out or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think so. And the reason I say that is kind of one of the things we talked about earlier. Like, I don't think he's ever had an elite passer. You know, if you go and look at Adrian Martinez at Nebraska or JT Barrett at Ohio State or the kid at Sam Ellinger right now, like Sam Ellinger is not, in my opinion, a draftable guy. I don't know, but I've not seen him be a first. And he's putting up ridiculous numbers, right? I mean, yeah, I think he had like 45 touchdowns and 7 interceptions last year, something crazy. But like, and so what the reason I say that is I don't think his offense is geared around his quarterback having to make NFL level plays through the air. And so because of that, like the kid they recruited right now out of high school, Aaron McLaughlin, I think is perfect for his offense. I mean, McLaughlin is a 6'5", 240-pound kid who runs a 4.65 laser, who can throw the ball 100 yards down the field. I mean, not literal, but you know what I mean. Just strong arm vertically. But you can run him 15 to 20 times a game as just a dual threat guy. Like, he is a physical – like Sam Ellinger. I mean, Sam Ellinger had a season, I think his second year under Beck, where he rushed for 15 touchdowns, you know, and threw for 30. I mean, just the complete – you know, just
yeah, he was the leading rusher for them 1 year.
Right. Just the entire offense is built around his ability to run and then hit vertical shots or whatever. Like, Aaron McLaughlin, I think, is ideal for that with his physical tools. So, but I don't think he's necessarily needs a guy who can just, you know, be Mike Glennon, for instance. Like, Mike Glennon has better arm talent than probably anybody that's been at NC State in the last 25 years. But there are certain offensive systems where Mike will tell you he's probably not best suited for, right? Like, if you're trying to run dual threat and zone read and QB power with Mike Glennon, you need to be fired. You know, like, and so I think with Hockman, I think Hockman gives them a good enough mix of mobility and toughness. And he's still – I mean, this is still a guy who went to the Elite 11 camps. I mean, it's not like he has a bad arm. You know, I've always been a believer. I don't know what you guys think of this, that I think left-handers generally don't look like they're throwing hard. It's just weird. It looks like a lefty doesn't ever really have a strong arm. But I've never really – like, I don't necessarily think he has a, you know, like a pop arm. Like, he doesn't have a shot. It's not weak. I think he can make enough throws. For me, just in reading the tea leaves and listening from behind the scenes, I think there's more to it from an intangible toughness leadership standpoint that's in play here then maybe we're kind of probably being led to believe, I would say.
Yeah. I guess what's interesting I got, I guess, 2 points and we can wrap up. The leadership thing is what kind of catches my eye or ear is, you know, all offseason we heard that Leary had improved in that department and was, you know, walking around as the alpha dog. So I'd be curious if that's not, you know, actually bearing out as time went on in camp. But I, the one thing I would say is I always looked at Leary as like an upside guy, like McSorley was for Penn State. He's mobile enough. He's got a big arm. He can take those chunk plays. If he sucks the defense in with the play action and with the run threat, he could open up that over the top big, big explosive play, which we have been missing for a long time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess I have been trying to parse through what Doran said in the offseason, what we've heard about Leary. And then given the COVID situation, that's why I kept thinking, like, I don't think the door is shut here. And I could see him surpass him in practice. But, I mean, it may just be that Leary might not be a good college quarterback. He, you know, Hockman is 2 for 2, at least, in the win-loss column when he's had to play. And Leary's got 0. So, you know, maybe we're good with Hockman.
Yeah, I think with that, you know, we've scored 45 points, the most we've scored in what, 2 years since probably that Syracuse game on the road with Finley. He didn't make many mistakes. I think everybody's hoping if you can maintain some level of that output with the running game and not rely on him, then, you know he doesn't get put in that position to make mistakes. Last year, he is trying to do a lot with very little. So, we'll see. I guess that's the only thing. Only way we can go with this is we'll see what happens. Hopefully, we're talking about this, nitpicking more wins, right? Because I think that they look really good. Whoever's the quarterback, right? They have the potential to be a decent football team. But as always, James, thanks for taking your time to join us and set Will straight. And I appreciate it.
A win?
Wow. Oh my gosh! Wow, that's a questionable decision. Rumble in the Jungle, right, 2 is coming.
We'll record another one later in the week, but as always, go Pack.
Go Pack.